Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Welcome to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, your primetime destination for bold conversations, unfiltered truth, and real-life inspiration. I'm your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, broadcasting live from San Juan, Puerto Rico. I've been back for a few months now, and finally getting back into the groove of things. So it's great to be back in my second home. Anyway, tonight we're diving into part four of our series called Random Rants and Real Talk. These are episodes where I let loose a little bit, speak more freely, and share a little bit about what's been heavy on my spirit or just whatever is trending in these streets, okay? So let's go ahead and get into it. All right, so what do we have? Juneteenth is tomorrow. Does anybody care? Now, we know the current administration doesn't give a damn about Juneteenth, Black History Month, Hispanic Heritage Month, LGBTQ, Pride, any of that, any other marginalized group with a nationally recognized observance. And I could be wrong about that, but I probably am not. I remember earlier this year, before I retired, how the current administration were just really coming out of the gate swinging at diversity, equity, and inclusion, or DEI. And it just didn't stop there. They came for almost anything that might have made the playing field a little bit more even and less lopsided. So it was basically like they were saying, okay, y'all had y'all moment now. Go sit down. Go sit down. You know, so I think it's safe to say that they've made their priorities loud and clear. But let's just put the current administration aside for a minute. Okay. Do we care about Juneteenth? And I'm talking about we the people, Black folks in particular, because I'm Black, if you haven't noticed, and I'm not even sure I care about Juneteenth like perhaps I should. And that's not entirely on me, because I'll put it this way. Okay, so I wasn't the most attentive student back when I was in school, mostly because I was just trying to survive and keep from getting bullied, but I don't remember learning anything at all about Juneteenth or anything about Juneteenth, really, when I was in school. I don't think any of my contemporaries have either. Have any of you guys heard of Juneteenth back when you were in school? And this was at least back in the day when they were at least trying to teach some form of Black history in the school. These kids today, they don't even know regular history, I don't think, let alone Black history. Half of them don't even know who Rosa Parks is, and they certainly don't know about Claudette Colvin. So Claudette Colvin, just really quickly, she was just 15 years old when she refused to give up her bus seat to a white passenger in Montgomery, Alabama. This was about 9 months before the incident with Rosa Parks. So Claudette Colvin was the true unsung hero of the civil rights movement, and her bravery that she showed that day helped to lay the groundwork for the Montgomery bus boycott. So sadly, she didn't really get her due. Kind of, you know, Rosa Parks just seemed to just take it and run with it. But there was an incident that predated Rosa, and her name was Claudette Colvin. So just in case you didn't know that little bit of history. But anyway, back to my point about Juneteenth. When President Biden declared that this was going to be a federal holiday, it was in June of 2021. I was happy to have another day off, you know, but did I really understand the meaning behind what Juneteenth was at the time? No, I didn't. I'll be honest about it. But I'm a fairly inquisitive person, and I don't like walking around ignorant about things. So, of course, I did my research just to find out what Juneteenth was about. But yeah, honestly, prior to that, I had never heard of Juneteenth in my life. And I know I'm not alone about that. So I don't feel too bad. But I'll tell you what I do feel a little guilty about, and that's I don't really care that tomorrow is Juneteenth. Like, I'm not fired up about it. I'm not excited necessarily. I'm just not anything. I'm just sort of indifferent towards it. And I venture to say that the average black person feels the same way that I do about it. And I'm not saying that we don't care about it in the same sense that I guess a non-black person may not care. I'm just saying that I feel like a lot of black folks feel disconnected from Juneteenth, whether that's due to a lack of awareness or a lack of understanding or just not being taught about it growing up. I don't know. But I guess what I'm saying is that I don't know anyone who's throwing a barbecue tomorrow or marching or, you know, any parades that's going on. A few of us may watch a documentary or something, you know, tonight or tomorrow, but as far as what I've been seeing, nobody really cares, myself included. And, you know, I'll be honest, that kind of makes me feel messed up. You know, I feel kind of like a bad black person. Is there such thing? You know, I'm being serious because it's not anything I'm losing sleep over or anything like that. But if I'm being honest, there's a part of me that's like, Andre, you really don't have anything planned for Juneteenth. Not even a hot dog, you know. So I'm not going to throw a barbecue. I'm not marching. I'm not going to a parade or anything like that. But so that I can at least sleep a little easier tonight and feel like I did something, I'm going to break down really quick what Juneteenth is and why it's important. And this is just for anyone who doesn't know. It's a lot of people who still don't know. Or just for someone who may need a refresher, okay? So, in plain terms, Juneteenth marks the day, which was June 19th in 1865, when enslaved black people in Galveston, Texas, were finally told that they were free. And mind you, this was about 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation that had already been signed into law by Abraham Lincoln. So it took almost 3 years before black people in Texas were notified that slavery had been outlawed. So even though slavery was illegal, Texas, I guess they didn't get the memo and they were still doing business as usual. And we know what that was all about. But it took Abraham Lincoln sending Union troops to physically ride into Galveston to formally announced the end of slavery. Okay, again, this took place on June 19, 1865, which was 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed into law. So that's what Juneteenth is. It's not the day slavery ended in America. It's the day that the last known group of enslaved black people in the South finally got word about it, that slavery had ended. So in a way, Juneteenth is less about celebrating freedom and more about recognizing the delay in those freedoms, the delay in justice, the delay in dignity, and the delay in humanity. So that's what makes Juneteenth relevant. Because if we're real about it, even now in 2025, so many of us are still waiting for some version of freedom, whether it's financial freedom, mental freedom, freedom from broken systems, and this, I'm trying to be nice, this small-minded leadership that we currently have. So, you know, black folks, I know we're largely collectively not going to do anything, but if we're going to barbecue or have a cookout or something like that, it really should be tomorrow. Not 4th of July, which is what we're all used to, because that's not really our Independence Day, if you know what I mean. So, look, even if you're not going to throw a cookout or have red velvet cupcakes, which apparently is a Juneteenth tradition, I saw that online today, if you're not going to do any of that, just take a moment then to reflect, not just on what happened, but on what's still happening. And if you do decide to fire up the grill tomorrow, just know it's not about the ribs and the food and all of that. It's about the reminder that freedom has always come late for us, but you know, we still claim it anyway, right? All right, so let's move on. Next topic, I'm gonna give you guys an update on my new drinking habit, okay? And Z and I talked about this a little bit before the show started, but so in part three of this Rants and Real Talk series, I shared with you guys that I'm now a weekend drinker, and I'm kind of liking it. You know, like I was telling Z, the first couple of weeks were tough. I'll admit that. I think I even tried to sneak a few drinks in on a Thursday a time or two. But seriously, I have noticed a change in my behavior, my productivity, and my overall health. Now, I know that sounds kind of like I was a total alcoholic, but, you know, I can admit that at the very least, I was a heavy drinker. That's if I'm being delicate about it. But probably more accurately, I would say I was and have been a functioning alcoholic for most of my adult life. And I have absolutely no shame about admitting that. I don't, because number one, me admitting that live on air just now, it makes it easier for someone else who's struggling to admit that they also have a problem. And two, if you can't admit the truth about yourself and you can't admit the truth to yourself, then you really do have a problem. And three, you're more than likely a heavy drinker yourself. Because if you recall in the last episode, the episode before last, I reported that according to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, if you're drinking more than four drinks on any day or more than 14 drinks in a week, for men, that is, then you're a heavy drinker slash alcoholic. And for women, if you drink more than three drinks in one day or more than seven drinks in a week, then you're also an alcoholic. And remember, one drink is a 12-ounce can of beer, one 5-ounce glass of wine, or a shot of liquor. So you see what I'm saying? That put me in the company with a lot of other people. And I remember at the time when I reported that statistic that I just gave you, I remember being a little bit pissed about it. Because my whole thing was, okay, four drinks in one day. That sounds like a good time to me, you know? And five and six drinks, even better. But I can say that, you know, even with just a month into this new drinking habit that I have, I can look back and see where I can see where they're coming from to a certain extent. Four plus drinks in a day, unless you're on like vacation or you're on a cruise or you got something else unique happening, or four or more drinks in a day is a bit much. I can say that now. I can be honest about that, you know. And I'm not saying I still don't have some work to do, right? Because even though I've been, you know, I've switched to just drinking on the weekends, I've noticed that I still consume a fairly good amount of alcohol, right? So the first couple of weeks, it was like I was just so glad it was Friday. I was so glad I made it to Friday. So, you know, I found where I was on my second bottle of wine before the sun was even down on a Friday. You know, so this is how I planned it out. So I usually get sometime during the week three bottles of wine. This, and I'm talking about for my new regimen I have now. And one bottle is supposed to be for Friday and the other two for Saturday and Sunday. Well, I was already on the second bottle before Saturday hit, you know. And I think that was just because I was looking so forward to the weekend and being able to let loose and have a couple of drinks. And so I would find myself running out of all three bottles before it got Sunday. So I would end up going back to the package store and getting like a bottle of liquor or something just to finish out the rest of the weekend. So still consuming a good amount of alcohol, but at least it wasn't on a daily basis. At least it was being condensed to the week, you know. But even with that, it's sort of a good thing because Now by around 8 or 9 o'clock at night on a Sunday, I'm sick of alcohol. I don't want to drink anymore by that time. In fact, this past Monday, I'll tell you what I did. I did something I rarely do. And that's, I took some leftover vodka and I poured it down the drain. That's how sick of alcohol I was at the end of this past weekend. I remember, and this was a couple of weeks back, this was around the time when I first started my weekends only rule. I had, I snuck in a couple of drinks on like a, it was like a Tuesday or something, I don't know. And my, let's just say my accountability partner, was furious that I was sneaking sips in. And he poured an entire bottle of Bombay Sapphire gin down the kitchen sink drain. I was so effing mad, but I had to keep cool about it. I just kept it inside so I wouldn't come across like a belligerent drunk. But I was so mad. I was like, you son of a bitch. That bottle cost $40. And I didn't even pay for it. But still, it was just more so the fact that it was a brand new bottle of good liquor that was supposed to be for the next weekend. And it's not like I was going to be sneaking drinks all week. I just, you know, it was, I was new to that regimen where I'm only drinking on the weekend. I was just starting out. And so I just had a little weak moment and just needed a couple of sips. But I was upset, but I just kept it inside. I was like, Andre, just stay calm. Don't cuss him out. He's just trying to help you. Right. Oh my God. But the old me would have showed completely out. I mean, to the point to where it could have possibly fractured the friendship. And I'm just so glad I don't act like that anymore. And this is why therapy is important, because the unhealed version of myself had a lot of unresolved anger. Remember we talked about that a couple of episodes back? Had a lot of unresolved anger. And if it weren't for my therapy, that one little episode of him pouring out that liquor and confronting me and challenging me like that, it would have triggered me because, you know, of the bullying and not standing up for myself and, you know, how I said I would never allow something like that again. It would have triggered me. I would have went completely berserk over something relatively petty, just, you know, as a trauma response. And I would have said or did some things that would have just been completely unnecessary and could have permanently fractured the friendship when all the person is trying to do is help me. You see how that works? You see why I say therapy is important? You know, and so I know all of that probably sounds like really bad and like I have a serious drinking problem, but I promise you it's nothing like that. Like I mentioned in the other episode, drinking was more, for me, it was more of like a habit than it was an addiction, you know? I've been drinking since I was 16 years old. It started as a coping mechanism, you know, something to help me be more social and to show more of my personality so I'm not so introverted and shy like I can be. And the same thing for, you know, when I got a little older and I started going to parties with my friends or out to the clubs. I am an introvert. I keep trying to tell people this. I am a true introvert. So there has never been an instance where I felt comfortable at a party or at a club. I've always had to rely on alcohol to sort of loosen me up enough to where, you know, I can be social and have a good time. And even with family events, it's the same thing. Just because it's my family and people who know me and, you know, people I'm comfortable around, it doesn't make it any easier for me. You know, left to my own devices without a crutch, I would much rather find a quiet space in the room or a corner somewhere and just play with my phone or just, you know, watch everybody else have a good time. But after so many years of becoming known as the life of the party and, you know, all of this, there becomes this pressure to keep up that facade, right? So when you see me at a party or a club or even on social media dancing, you know, I post a video, a lot of you may have seen it, of me dancing at a casino. Anytime you see me carrying on like that, that's more the alcohol than me, you know? I guess that's why they call them spirits, because, for me, it truly turns me into someone I'm not. But not in a bad way. Not in a bad way. And, you know, I know for some people, when they drink, they may come belligerent or angry, even violent in some cases. Or there are instances where a person may exhibit behaviors that are destructive to themselves or to other people. But it's never been like that for me. You know, I'm a happy drinker. I sing, I dance, I joke, I laugh. I have an obnoxious or infectious, it depends on who you're talking to, but I have a very loud, obnoxious laugh. And, you know, I just like to have fun. You know, then that's the extent of it for me. If alcohol ever put me in a place where it disrupted my life and, you know, put me in a space where I wouldn't have been able to be successful, I would have done away with it a long time ago. But to the point I was making earlier, it's hard to break a habit, true, but breaking an addiction, that's going to involve a lot more than just willpower, right? You're going to need willpower, you're going to need prayer, you're going to need support, maybe even a medical intervention, depending on your vice or what you have going on, and group therapy and counseling and things like that. Thankfully, it wasn't that serious for me, but if you or someone you love is struggling with an addiction, if you can, encourage them to seek help. Seriously, if they want to break the addiction, then try to get them some help. Because it's going to be something that's extremely difficult for the person to do on their own and in their own strength. They're going to need some help. And there's no shame in that at all. And remember, addictions come in all types of different forms. Some are visible, like drug and alcohol abuse. Others, they may be able to hide a little better. It could be something like compulsive gambling or overeating. Stealing. Some people have sex addictions. I know a couple of those. So regardless of the substance or the behavior, the impact of it can be just as devastating to a person's life in terms of their mental and their emotional state, their spiritual well-being. But the good news about that is that there is help available. There is help out there. And a lot of it is free. So, like I said, if you or someone you love is struggling, silently struggling, loudly struggling, remember, there are a lot of free and confidential resources that are ready and available to help you with support and guidance and get you on a path to recovery. Now, I'm going to give you a couple of numbers. I have a list here of some trusted organizations that you can, look into, and maybe they could help you or the person in your life that you love that has an issue. Now, if the person has a gambling problem, there is an agency called the National Problem Gambling Helpline. And I'm going to give you a 1-800 number. You can text this number. You can call it. They also have chat or what have you. But the number is 1-800-GAMBLER. So 1-800-426-2537. If anyone you know has an eating disorder, whether it's bulimia, anorexia, I don't know who has those things anymore. I know there's some people that do, but bulimia and anorexia just seem like it's so like 80s, like an 80s disorder. But I know that there are millions of people still struggling with that. If you eat too much, I know a few people who are morbidly obese, they can't control their portions. and they have an issue with, they just can't stop eating. That's an addiction. There's an organization called the Alliance, and they give free therapist-led in-person or virtual support groups. Their website is AllianceForEatingDisorders.com, AllianceForEatingDisorders.com, okay? If you have problems with drugs or alcohol or know someone that does, they have a national drug helpline. This is 24 hours, 7 days a week. It's confidential. Their number is 1-844-289-0879. National Drug Helpline, 1-844-289-0879. We talked about sex addiction earlier. Don't be ashamed. That's more common than you think. I actually found a service here that offers support for sex addictions. And I don't mean to laugh. Sex addictions and love addictions. I didn't, you know, necessarily know that was a thing. But apparently some people are addicted to love. And it causes them a lot of, just issues. Let me give you a website. It's S as in Sam, L as in Larry, A, F as in Frank, W, S as in Sam, .org. Okay, it's called the Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, whatever that is. But it's S-L-A-A. So it's fellowship-based support. I do not mean to laugh. It's just I never heard of love addicts until I looked this up today. But they have fellowship-based support for people struggling with obsessive sexual or romantic behaviors. I told you it can take a lot of forms now. So just because you're able to hide yours and make it look pretty, it doesn't mean that it's still not having a negative impact on your life. All right, this is the last one. This is just for anyone with any mental health and or addiction issues. This is FAMHSA, National Hotline, 1-800-662-HELP. 1-800-662-4357. Again, this is confidential, 24/7. They speak various languages on this line, and it's a good resource for substance abuse and or mental health. And I lied, there is one more. I found another one that is a suicide and crisis lifeline, and you can dial this from your regular phone or your cell phone. Just dial 988. So it's just like another emergency number. Just dial 988. You'll instantly be connected with someone that can help you if you're having a mental health crisis or you're under emotional distress or you're having suicidal thoughts or something like that. They'll talk you through that type of stuff, okay? All right, how are we looking on time? 6:28. Before we go to break, let me give you an update on my friendship with Craig. Because in part three, I mentioned that my friendship with Craig has sort of changed over the years. You know, it all started with that fallout between me and the girlfriend. And then my numerous relocations and deployments all over the world. And then most recently, his now staunch atheist beliefs, which conflicts directly with my personal beliefs. Not that I'm religious at all. I grew up sort of in a religious type thing, but I've kind of moved away from that. I believe that religions are man-made constructs that were designed as a tool to manipulate and control and divide the masses. And I talked about this a little bit on our very last show with Jeff Cleckley when we were talking about his near-death experience. But even with that, I still do believe in God, Jehovah, Jesus, Yahweh, the source, the universe, whatever you want to call it. I don't believe that matters so much as we treat others the way we wish to be treated while we're on this earth. You know, all the arguments and divisiveness that we have going on in this world about various religions or non-religious views and all this, I don't think any of that serves any type of useful purpose. And yet that's something that my friend Craig seems to enjoy engaging in, you know. But even with that, I can look past Craig's personal beliefs. Like I said, we don't have to have the same beliefs in order to be friends, you know. But I can look past that and still be his friend. So long as we agree to disagree about certain things, God being one of them. I think more of our issue has been the thing with the girlfriend, that coupled with the distance. I think those two things combined just sort of led to us growing apart to a certain extent. But I feel like the love is still there. You know, if he needs me, I'm of course going to be there for him. And I believe that he'd be there for me as well if I needed it. You know, I think what I'm mourning is the closeness that we had. I think that's what it is. But, you know, things change over time. And we have to adapt to things when they change, you know. And I think I may have, I don't know, a bit of a romanticized concept of friendship that I'm still trying to contend with. You know, most friendships and relationships are not going to look like the ones on TV. In real life, especially when you're talking about getting in your 40s and your 50s, friendships are complicated and nuanced. You know, people go through changes and, you know, different things, and you just have to do your best to be a friend and love people through whatever they may be going through or whatever you may be going through. You know, just because things start out one way doesn't mean it's going to continue that way. You know, so I don't know. I think the lesson here is to love people the best you know how and not be rigid in your friendships. You know, be willing to adapt, because every friendship is going to evolve and change over time. And, you know, if there's a time, if it comes a time where we have to let go or separate with one of our friends, just do it with love. Do it with love in your heart for that person and wish them well. And I think that's all a person can do. Sort of like what I was talking about with my other friend. I said I wasn't going to say his name no more because I was dragging him for like 3 or 4 episodes. But yeah, that's all that you can do is try to love people the best you can. And sometimes the friendship is going to drift and, you know, kind of fade, and that's okay. You know, but just try not to force anything. Just let things happen the way they're going to happen and do the best that you can on your part. All right, so with that, we're going to take a quick commercial break, but don't go too far. When we come back, we're going to switch gears a little bit and lighten the mood, and we're going to do a little bit of my new segment that I love called Better Late Than Never. Plus, we'll talk about a few topics if we have time that you don't want to miss, okay? So more rants and real talk coming up. Stay with us. We'll be back.
Looking for your next car? Amazon Autos has you covered. With just a few clicks, you can shop a wide selection of new vehicles, compare prices, read reviews, and even arrange pickup or delivery, just like ordering anything else on Amazon. It's the future of car buying. Simple, transparent, and all online. Backed by Amazon's trusted network and partnering with local dealerships, Amazon Autos is redefining how we shop for cars. Visit Amazon.com/autos and drive into the future today. All right, class of 2025, let's talk real quick. If you're out here applying for jobs, getting ghosted, overwhelmed, or just straight up tired, hey, I've been there. The search can feel like a full-time job with no paycheck. That's why I always recommend Indeed.com to folks just starting out. It's simple, clean, and gets straight to the point. You set your filters, upload your resume once, and you're off. No fluff, no hoops, just jobs that actually match what you're looking for. And listen, don't let the job boards intimidate you. You don't need it all figured out to get started. Just take the first step. If you're ready to stop scrolling and start applying, check out Indeed.com. It helped me, a lot of others, and I know it'll help you too. Log on to Indeed.com today.
Welcome to another broadcast of Spiritual Concerns, the Deborah Ruffini Show on Artists First Radio Network. We're live from England on Saturdays and Sundays, 3 p.m. New York, 8 p.m. London. All past shows are podcasts. Find them at artistfirst.com. I'll be your host, where issues relating to spiritual matters of concern will be largely examined and discussed. Enjoy the show.
You're back live with Dr. Andre Geary.
Hey, welcome back to the show. So if you're just tuning in, this is part four of our Random Rants and Real Talk series. So before the break, we covered the meaning and the modern day relevance of Juneteenth and shared a quick update on my new weekends only drinking habit, which I'm learning to love a little bit more with each week that passes. And we also talked about the fine line between routine and addiction, or more specifically between, but the fine line between routine and addiction. And we unpack the reality of friendships that evolve over time, fade over time, and shift a little bit, and the importance of staying flexible in those situations. So like I said, now let's lighten the mood with my new favorite segment called Better Late Than Never. And so if you're new around here, this is where I shamelessly admit to being a little late on just about every pop culture trend you can think of, whether it's a movie that came out 4 or 5 years ago, or a viral moment that everyone's already forgotten about. That's what the vibe is. So let's get into it. All right, so I finally got around to watching the remake of The Color Purple. Okay? Again, it's been established that I'm very late. This was 2023 when this came out. But I took a look at it, and you know what? It's a very different experience from the original. So this is a remake, of course. It's, I would say, it's bold, and it's a musical adaptation of Alice Walker's classic novel. It's produced by Oprah Winfrey, Steven Spielberg, Scott Sanders, and Quincy Jones. And the director was Blitz Bazawule. It stars Fantasia Barrino. This was her film debut. Of course, she played Celie. Taraji P. Henson played Shug Avery. Danielle Brooks, who's phenomenal, by the way, she played Sophia. One of my favorite new actors, new to me. He's been at this for a while, but Coleman Domingo, he played Mister, and Corey Hawkins played Harpo. Now, like I said, this came out back in December of 2023, and it sort of blends the Broadway-style musical that Oprah was producing with, you know, the whole movie concept and the emotional storytelling and the rich visuals and all that stuff that she adapted from the stage. And if you compare that to the original 1985 film, which was also directed by Steven Spielberg, this original movie was a drama. It wasn't a musical. And of course, it starred the great Whoopi Goldberg, Oprah Winfrey herself, and Danny Glover. So if you don't remember this, that version earned 11 Oscar nominations. It didn't win one, but it got 11 Oscar nominations, and it's often considered sacred ground in black cinema. So yeah, watching this updated version, it brought some nostalgia, but it also brought a different vibe. And I'm going to speak a little bit about my thoughts about this. I just jotted down some notes that I want to relay to you all about this. Okay, so the first thing that I like, let's talk about what I liked first. I actually liked that it was a musical production. I don't typically like musicals, but this was very well done, and done in a way that made sense for the movie without sacrificing the story. So I love that it was a musical. Very great job. I thought Fantasia did an outstanding job, being that this was her film debut. I think she did just as great of a job as Jennifer Hudson did in Dreamgirls, which was her film debut. Fantasia actually played Celie on Broadway for 3 years. So I think this is where she kind of cut her teeth and why she was able to kind of effortlessly transition to this role. But she did a fantastic job. Great acting. The production was great. They spared no expense when it came to production. The costumes were fantastic and colorful, bright. The cinematography was outstanding. The musical score and the choreography was extremely well done. And I love that the choreography was also era specific. They didn't try to put any twerking or any of these new dances in the choreography. It was very timeless for that time, the 40s, 50s, back during the setting of the movie. And I also love that Quincy Jones and Steven Spielberg were a part of the production team. I think that gave some continuity to this new version and bringing in some similar elements from the original. And what else? Oh, Whoopi had a cameo in the film. And it wasn't just any cameo. I thought it was very well thought out. So Whoopi Goldberg, she cameoed as the midwife who delivers young Celie's second child. So that was sort of a subtle but meaningful role that kind of was symbolic, because it was sort of like a bridge between the original and the new version. It showed respect to Whoopi's role as Celie. So it kind of, it was very symbolic and meaningful. And I thought it was kind of like a chef's kiss type thing for the new film. I love that they dug a little deeper with the implied romance between the Shug Avery character and Celie. They lightly glazed over it in the original. And I don't know if that was due to the era. You know, I think this came out in what, the late 70s, so I don't know if it was because it was the taboo for that time, or Alice didn't feel like it was an important part of the story. But they kind of went a little bit more in detail with that and made some subtle inferences there, so I did like that. And I actually agree with all of the casting choices except one, and I'll talk about that a little bit later when I talk about the stuff I don't like. Coleman Domingo, who played Mister, he embodied this role. I don't think there's anyone else who could have followed Danny Glover in that role without some form of eye rolling. He was perfect. Whoever cast him for that, it was the excellent choice. You couldn't have made a better decision for that. He just embodied the role of Mister for this new version of the movie. So I love that. I felt like the producers understood the assignment with regard to keeping the original producers as part of the team, Quincy, Steven, of course, Oprah Winfrey. I feel like trying to do this without either one of them would have been kind of a foul. Given how masterly the original was done by the main producers, Steven Spielberg. I feel like all these producers understood what this film meant to the culture. Meaning, if you're going to go there and try to readapt this and reimagine this, you better do it right, and you better do it and handle it with care. Because The Color Purple is one of those movies that's sort of like a family heirloom for a lot of people, especially Black folks, you know. And given how we were already starting to feel some kind of way about Oprah, you know, given her connections with Harvey Weinstein and, you know, how she was starting to come for some other folks, you know, she could not afford to get this wrong. So I think overall it was just a great job, great production. Now, here are a couple of things I didn't like about it. I talked about casting earlier. for the most part, they got the casting right. What I didn't like was John Batiste being cast as Grady, which, of course, was Shug Avery's husband. It just didn't, it felt off. Like, okay, the original Grady was sexy. He was sexy, he was charming, he had panache, he had this devilish but irresistible vibe sort of thing going on. John Batiste, for me, was just okay in the role. To me, it was like poor casting. John Batiste gives delicate crooner vibes, in my opinion. You know, maybe a little bit bisexual, you know. To me, he just wasn't the best compliment to Shug Avery's character as portrayed by Taraji, because Taraji and her character, Shug, they're like firecrackers. And John Batiste just didn't, he didn't hit his mark. He didn't do a poor job, but I just felt like they just dropped the ball with the casting. He comes off as like a, kind of like a soup sandwich a bit for me. But thankfully, his role was not prominent enough in the movie to ruin the whole thing for me. So, you know, that was just more of a minor annoyance on my part. The only thing I didn't like, too, with this, aside from the casting choice with John Batiste, I didn't like that this film only garnered one Academy Award nod versus the other got, like, what, 11? I feel like that was a bit of a foul. All of the great acting that was in this movie, Taraji definitely deserved to be nominated for something with her portrayal of Shug Avery. Definitely Danielle Brooks. At least she was nominated. She did a phenomenal job as Sophia. But, you know, the film didn't win in its category or any other Oscars category, so that was disappointing. But hey, at least it got one. At least it got one nomination. And there were other awards that the remake got. It got a number of NCAA awards and I believe a Golden Globe for ensemble cast. So, you know, something there. But like I said, the remake received other multiple accolades. With my other gripe about casting, everything else about the movie is superb. So if you haven't seen it yet, you definitely want to stream it and try to watch it this weekend. It's about a 2.5-hour movie, but you'll be glad you watched it. It's really well done. What else do we have here? Better Late Than Never. We talked about the pay pig trend. Still nothing on that. It's just a matter of time before someone sends me something on that. They haven't sent me anything yet, but maybe I'll do another post, you know. But I have to keep you updated on that. What else? There are some other things I want to talk about. I think I might save it for next time. But I kept you guys long enough. I think I'm going to go ahead and close this one now. But like I said, this has been another episode of Random Rants and Real Talk, and I really like these shows. I really appreciate you spending your hour with me. These episodes are fun for me, so if you laughed, if you learned something, if you know, raise your eyebrows a couple of times, I feel like my job here is done. You know, if you're new, go ahead and follow the show on Spotify, Amazon Music. Be sure to log on to artistfirst.com. That's where you can catch replays of this show. You can also catch them on YouTube. Just look for the hashtag LWDAJ. Next week, Wednesday, same time, same vibe. It's going to be a fresh new episode. You definitely don't want to miss it. Until then, everybody be good to yourself. Cut folks off that are draining your energy. And, you know, like I said, just always do the best you can. Have a great evening ahead. I'm Dr. Andre Jerry, and this has been Live with Dr. Andre Jerry. Good night, everybody. Take care.